Hey, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. Hope you are, what should I call it, weathering the storm? This is the craziest time I have ever lived in. Hopefully yours as well. But here we are, and if we are smart, we're looking downrange. We will be hunting this fall. Gosh dang it. Come hell or high water. So let's focus on the future. This week, we'll focus on shotguns. Thought it would be fun to carry on the debate, if you will. Side-by-sides versus over-and-unders versus pump guns versus semi-automatics and everything in between. So looking forward to all the calls and learning something about guns and about why you love certain shotgun styles. We are here in the Cabela's podcast studio, where we'll also cover a whole bunch of other stuff, including a public access spot that I really want to go to that haven't been to yet. Some hunting dog care and handling advice, adventures and strategies, tips and tactics. It's all coming up on the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. Glad you could join me. Do me a favor when you're done here. Subscribe, rate, or review the podcast, because that's how we get ranked, so other people can share the fun as well. I am trying to focus on all the stuff that's going to happen this fall, and of course, one of the things we're all looking at right now as a result of that is getting our dogs in shape. Flick, almost 3 years old, becoming a no-slip retriever day by day. I'm pretty proud of him. And thankful to everybody who's donated, if you will, dead birds from field trials and hunt tests, so that we always have the real deal in the freezer, despite my wife's disdain for that. Hey, good trick. If you haven't done this before, I learned this from Evan Graham about 20 podcasts ago. You know those dead birds that you keep in the freezer? They come out, they thaw, they're kind of slimy, they're kind of wet, they're kind of gross. Yeah. Store them in paper grocery bags instead. The freezer will then dry those birds out once again, and a little bit more realistic and a little bit less disgusting when you use them to train your dog. Thanks, Evan Graham, for that and for, well, all sorts of other advice that I'll share again down the road, I'm sure. Like I said, trying to stay optimistic. I'm kind of known, I guess, for being a side-by-side shotgun fan. It came kind of by default. Many, many years ago, I was on a fly fishing trip, and one of our party members was not having much luck. He was kind of new to that world, so I spent a little bit of time showing him how to dead drift a weighted nymph under a strike indicator, which was a brand new concept back in the day. I know. Bamboo rods are making a resurgence, but we were using them all the time back then. Anyway, I showed Buzz Fawcett how to catch fish on a nymph, and a few months later, I was reading a story about shooting like a predator, and sure enough, that was Buzz's byline on the story. I called him up, and I said, "I didn't know you were a shooting instructor," and the rest is history. Went out there, spent a day with him, shot 1,000 rounds, all with a beautiful Spanish side-by-side. And you know, you have a little success with something like that, it's like your lucky fishing hat or your favorite pair of golf shoes, I guess. You're not going to get rid of them. In fact, you're probably going to wear the same underwear you wore when you won that last game. So side-by-sides to me are just a little confidence builder, and it's kind of fun being connected in one way or another to the past a little bit. I can't wait to get to your calls and find out why you love your gun, whatever it is, side-by-side, pump, automatic, machine gun. It's all good. Right after these quick messages, first from sageandbreaker.com, they make the gun care products that are crafted at the highest caliber. They got a new firearms grease. They got a chamois for cleaning your guns, all sorts of other great stuff. And they also have blog posts by me. The last one just up today, in fact, called Chant, Clack, and Ponder. If you wonder what that's all about, well, it's about shotguns as meditation. Check it all out and sign up for the mailing list at sageandbreaker.com. And Dogtra, just talked to my friends at Dogtra today as well. Love their T&B dual training collar system, two collars. You can use them on two dogs, both ends of one dog. No toggling back and forth, two sets of buttons, so you can do it all by touch. You don't have to look at the dang screen. I love mine. You'll love yours. Don't forget, there's a nice discount. I'll tell you about it later on in the podcast. But right now, enough of me. Let's get over to you. He says he's sitting on the front porch watching the sunset. I wish I could say that. Pete, welcome to the program.
Scott, thank you. I'm happy to be on.
You're coming in loud and clear. Everything's great. What neck of the woods are you calling from?
I live in Central Florida, south of a little town called St. Cloud.
Great. So, it is setting right there now, I bet. And what kind of dog you running these days, Pete?
My son and I have German Shorthairs.
Excellent. Well, good for you. That's almost as ugly as mine. Well, our whole debate this time around is the style of shotgun we love to hunt with. And I know it's hard. It's like narrowing it down to your favorite child. Maybe you've had that dilemma as well. But if you had to figure out one shotgun style to use all the time, what would be your preference?
Well, you know, as a young man starting out, obviously, like most kids, I started shooting a pump and then kind of graduated up to a Remington 1100, which was Christmas present one year, and that was my favorite gun for a long, long time. And then early in my first Christmas with my wife, she bought me a Browning Over and Under 20 gauge Satori. And that gun has, I have lots of other guns, and guns have come and gone out of my gun cabinet, but that gun is just my favorite. It's just the way it fits, and just the double suits me. I've always enjoyed it, and I've tried other guns, but I always seem to come back to her.
I wonder how much of that is because it was a gift from someone you really care about.
It has a lot to do with it, I think. It was the first double that I ever owned, and I'm a tall guy, so I had it fitted. I actually had it fitted a little bit for me, and that made it work better. And I have I kind of grew up. That was for a long, long time. That was the only bird gun I owned that I hunted with, and so a lot of stories go with it, the history, and then I've had others come and go, but I always go back to the Browning.
Well, I love it, and I think there's something to that emotional thing. I got a technical question about fitting based on your being a tall guy as well, but first I just got to share with this. I dug a gun out, another side-by-side out of my gun safe a while back, and realized after about three trips that I was shooting it so much better than everything else, I just left it in the truck for the rest of the season. And I don't know how much of it is the fact that I shoot it so well, and I don't know why I shoot it so well, but it's going to be my first gun out of the truck next season as well. You think you really are shooting that Browning better?
I've shot other guns well. I think I probably just because I've shot it so much, and we're not sporting clays guys, but we got a trap thrower and we practice, and I've taken some lessons from some guys that are professionals about some things and maybe a better shot, but I think I'm just so confident with it, and I know when I pull that thing out of the case and get down off the buggy behind the dogs, if the bird gets up and gives me a pretty good shot, I always feel like I'm going to hit it.
Nice.
And I'll never I think with any kind of sporting thing, whether you play golf or whatever, you're fishing or whatever, you're trying to throw that lure in the perfect spot, if you don't think you can, you probably can't. And I think that's it. If you don't believe you're going to hit that bird, you're probably not.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, I guess we'll call it psychology, and there absolutely is truth to that. So when you had that gun fitted to you as a bigger guy, what did you actually have done?
So they did two things to, we did two things to it. Like I said, I was pretty young, so my uncle actually, who kind of took me under his wing, said, look, we're going to take you down there to my buddy who's a gunsmith and get it fitted. And so I'm about 6'5". Mm-hmm. And so they put up, we extended the stock with a pad basically. But they also, and I didn't know you even could do this to a gun. They adjusted the stock, the way the stock fit to the gun itself. So when I put that gun out to my cheek, I was looking where, the gun was looking where I was looking. And I trusted the guy who was doing it, my uncle. And she, you know, it seemed to work.
Did he bend the stock, like add more cast off to it, if you know what that term means?
I do. And so what they did was they took a little bit off the top of the stock, just actually sanded it and refinished it.
Yeah.
And then there's actually I want to say it's a wedge between the stock and the gun that the guy made.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, yeah, so basically it gave the gun, I'm probably getting this technical term wrong, a little more rise, because like I said, I'm taller. So
sure.
I wasn't looking over top of the barrel. I was looking down the barrel. And I haven't touched it since.
Hey, whatever works. And, you know, you think about it. Yeah, you got a little more space between your top lip and your eyeball than most people. So maybe they do need to do something with, I think it's called drop at comb. And I think the device you were talking about is called a shim in some cases.
Okay, that makes sense.
But whatever works, you know, it is all about geometry, and more power to you. So are you passing that on to your son? Are you going to, you're going to get him through the same progression there?
Well, my son, I have two sons. My youngest son, who is about my size, likes to hunt. He's not as big a bird hunter as my older son, who's not. He's, you know, he didn't have quite my height, but he definitely has my love for the sport. And so yeah, so they have both the boys have decided when I go on to the great bird hunting in the sky how they're going to divide my guns up between them. So
who gets your Satori?
I have a 28 and a 20, and so I think my older son wants the 28 and my younger son wants the 20.
I love it. Well, just make sure you put that in writing and you'll save everybody a lot of trouble. Pete, great to talk with you. I'll turn you back to your sunset. If you got something in one of your hands, just make a toast for me as it hits the water and you see the green flash. All right.
I will do that for you, sir. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
I'm Scott Linden, the host here at the Upland Nation podcast. On the line with me now, joining me here is Brian. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Scott. How you doing?
I am doing great. And yourself?
Not bad. Excellent. Starting to rain here in northern Indiana.
Yikes. yeah, but it could be worse. I mean, that's the kind of humidity I like when I'm in Indiana. Believe me, I've had the other kind as well. I'll never forget flying from Tucson to Evanston. Yeah, Evanston.
Evansville,
whichever. It was 80 degrees and 8% humidity when I got on the plane, and it was 80 degrees and 80% humidity when I got off in Indiana.
Yeah, yeah. It's either that way or it's 10 degrees and 2 foot of snow sometimes.
Yeah.
Not this year.
I think that's good. I'm not sure. I don't know if you're farming or what. So our talk, this podcast is all about our choice of guns. And you had an interesting take that I think a lot of people probably just assume that everybody thinks that it's a good idea. Why don't you tell me why you choose the gun you choose?
I choose the over and under or the side to side for simple reasons of an auto and a pump chuck the shells out and they go on the ground. You sometimes they land right on top. You can pick them up, but other times you don't. So I think it's all in good being a good conservationist, I guess, taking your trash out with you, you know, instead of leaving it on the ground and take other trash out too if you happen to see it, you know.
Yeah. Leave it cleaner than you found it, as they say. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I'll never forget when I was a budding chucker hunter, I was picking the brains of all the gurus in our world about that, and I talked to a guy who said, yeah, I shoot a semi-auto, and we at that point you could shoot it without a plug, so you could shoot five birds out of a covey. And he would. I mean, he was good.
Yeah.
And I said, how can you keep track of all those shells on the ground? He says, I never pick them up. And I said, you mean you just leave that trash there? And he said, I never thought about it as trash before.
Yeah.
And I wonder if other people are that way as well, but maybe not now. You know, we've been indoctrinated for a long time since I talked to this guy, but yeah, it works. So, what kind of gun do you like?
I like the over and under 12
of the
gauge.
Two. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're shooting a 12. Any particular brand that you like, or does it matter to you?
I have a Browning, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
What you know, just as long as it's an over and under, it goes bang bang, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a 12-step program for guys like you and me, and if you stand up at the meeting, you have to say, "I'm Scott, and I really don't give a damn what kind of brand it is. I just like to shoot the gun."
Yeah.
I apologize, because if you love a certain gun, or if you love a style, or if you love Italian versus Spanish versus Japanese versus American versus, I don't care. That's great. More power to you. So how was your season? Did you have a good one?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Got a few, but, there's too many places to go here in Northern Indiana.
Yeah.
And, kind of get stuck, you know, to some fence rows and some, you know, hay ground here and there, or some set aside ground. A lot of farmers around here leave a strip between their field and a ditch bank for a buffer zone.
Yeah.
In some places, and you know, they produce some pheasants in that area.
Well, that's good. And by the way, there is conservation money available for those buffers now. If you didn't know that, you might want to tell some of your friends. Pheasants Forever and Quail, particularly Quail Forever, is working in that world a lot. So we're trying to keep things positive and look downstream towards the fall, when we can take the dang face masks off and actually go hunting. What is your number one goal for this upcoming season?
To get my grandson started into upland hunting. He took his hunter safety course last fall and went out with his dad deer hunting, and I would really like to get him started into doing the upland hunting. I've taken him out a few times with some sporting clays and a few of the easier shots, but you know, finding a shotgun that'll fit him is one of the things. I'm going to have to take the hacksaw to one, I think, and cut the buttstock off, but that's my number one goal this year is to try to get him out and at least get him one bird, if not two or three.
I love it. You'll make a convert, I'm sure. And yeah, it's only a piece of wood, so take down as much as you need to. You know,
right.
Good luck on that, and thanks for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast. Take care and have a great evening.
All righty. Thanks. You too.
Will do.
Love it.
And from the Facebook pages, Jerry Whiteday says he loves them all. In his opinion, the over and under or side by side are the safest all around, and can be a single shot fairly easily for a kid, for example. They can be left open until you shoot. Yeah, so people can see. It's very obvious that they can see that it is safe, especially when handling dogs or crossing a fence, he says. Amen to that. Cameron Campbell says he loves his over and under, but the older he gets, the harder it is to swing it near the end of the hunt. Well, somebody would suggest maybe you need a really nimble, very expensive Italian gun. But he still loves them and hunts with a semi once in a while because it is so light and he can swing it as fast as hell. Yeah, I might have to look into that. Although I get a lot more benefit out of a heavy gun and swinging it slower, but that's my problem. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. We're talking all about guns and gun styles, preferences, and why you love what you love. So let's get back to the phones. And James joins me on the line. James, where are you calling from?
Bristolville, Ohio.
Hey, two Ohio guys that was Indiana. All right, well, two Ohio guys, you and me. I was born in Rocky River.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so what kind of dogs you hunting with these days, James?
I have red setters.
Oh, really? The real deal, with a capital R, yeah.
Yes, sir. They're they're Irish, but they're the reds.
Nice. How hard is it to find decent hunting bred, you know, field bred red setters in the U.S. these days?
It's not as bad as it used to be. There's the National Red Setter Field Trial Club has come a long way to bring the breed back, and they're really specific about their breeding and stuff. So You can find them out there. It's pretty easy to find a good pup.
I have fond memories of a television show I made many years ago in Montana, and the guide I was working with that day had a golden retriever and, at that point, one of the very, very rare red setters in the U.S. And I'm just enough colorblind, and that golden was field bred as well, so he was kind of skinny, and the red setter was, you know, kind of average. I couldn't tell which was which in the field.
Yeah, well, I've had my dogs called golden retrievers before, but and they're pretty mahogany too, so they're pretty red.
Well, that's good, and it would probably help me a little bit next time I meet one as well. So we're talking about shotguns and your preferences, not because we think anybody's preferences are better than others, but because it's kind of fun and it gets us a chance to look down at the next season. If you had to pick one gun and carry that gun the rest of your hunting life, James, what would it be?
It'd be a 16-gauge side-by-side with an English stock and a splinter front end.
Oh, let's get a little bit more specific there. What?
Okay. 28-inch barrels, two-cylinder modified.
Okay, so it sounds like you got a specific bird in mind when you're carrying that gun. Am I right?
Oh, yeah, woodcock. That's my bird.
And you like the 16 for that, or is it just you like the 16 because nobody else has one?
Well, I started out with a 16. First shotgun I ever shot was my dad's 16 Stevens. Model 1500 that I still have. That's my pheasant gun. But that was the first gun I shot. Then I went to a 20-gauge side-by-side Stevens Savage 311D. But I've had 16s ever since. And I don't know, I just love the gauge, and there's just something about it that fits everything I need.
You know, it's funny how often that that a gun or a hat or a vest or, you know, a thing, a gadget, is really a totem for other stuff that happened in our lives. You just, you shot one because your dad shot one. Do you feel any connection when you're out there carrying that gun around?
Oh, yeah, especially when I carry his.
Yeah.
I can sense that he's with me, and sometimes I'll even ask him, you know, where's a good spot? What do you think? You know, and I don't know. I just kind of get a feeling that he's kind of guided me around, you know?
You know, I use the term totem, and I think it's really true. There are things in some of the native worlds, they have what they call fetishes, and I don't mean you like high heels on your girlfriend, but you know what I mean? They're things,
yeah,
stuff that reference, sure, points, but they're tangible. They're, you know, carved stuff or whatever. I wonder if your gun is right in there with any other ritual device that people use to conjure up. I don't know. It could be deep thoughts or it could be not, but sounds like you got that connection there.
Yeah. It brings back memories. I mean, because he always carried that when he went, and I saw him take a lot of birds with it and stuff. And I don't know, it was just tradition with him, you know, to have the side-by-side and stuff.
Did anybody ever try to tempt you away and give you a machine gun or something like that?
No, I've been tempted with ARs and stuff, but nothing against an AR, but it's just not my style. I'm just a shotgun guy myself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you were going to give us any advice about shooting that gun well, I know you chose your chokes very carefully as well. Is there a reason you're shooting woodcock with what some of us would consider pretty tight chokes?
Yeah, that's early season, though, I compensate for that by using spreader loads that I reload.
Oh, yeah.
Which opens them up about a choke more, so I'd probably be like a cylinder, improved cylinder. But I do hunt grouse when there were grouse in Ohio, but I later on in the season, when they get out a little farther out and a little more skitty shot, my improved cylinder modified works pretty good.
You know, I've gone to that for almost every bird these days, and the reason being, when I hit one, I want to hit it really hard with more than one pellet. I don't want to chase that that dying chucker all the way down to the bottom of the hill again.
Yes.
I don't know that that's a problem with woodcock or grouse, but you know, it's yet one more reason to swing a slightly tighter choke once in a while.
Yeah. Well, the thing with woodcock is you can drop them, but it's finding them after they drop. That's where a dog comes in handy. But if you don't have a dog, you know, they could drop right at your feet and you would never see them. They're just so well camouflaged.
Yeah, I've been there and done that, and I know exactly what you mean. That might be the best argument for never hunting without a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a red dog.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I love them red dogs.
Well, good on you. And if you were looking downrange at your first few days of the season, what are you anticipating most about this upcoming hunting season?
I guess it'd be getting outdoors.
Yeah.
I mean, we're kind of confined here, but I mean, we can run our dogs and fish and stuff, but I don't know. There's something about the fall and the opening of woodcock season and that. And I've just got a passion for the little bird. And I'm actually chairman of the American Woodcock Society, Northern Ohio chapter here. But I don't know. I just love the fall weather, you know, the smell, the change of seasons, and just watching the dog work through the cover and stuff. So I'm anticipating that, whether I get a bird or not.
So am I, and hold that thought, because there's been so much talk, and I used to do a magazine column, and I asked readers once in a while what their favorite outdoor smells were. So start working on that, practice your smelling, because we'll be talking about that down the road. Hey, great to talk with you. Thanks for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
My pleasure, and everybody out there, gotta try a side-by-side at least once.
There you go, everybody. James knows of what he speaks. Thanks a lot, James.
Okay, thank you very much.
Joining me from, well, somewhere over there, I know better anymore not to guess based on area codes, but Bo, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm outside of Memphis.
Memphis, yes. You ever get downtown? You ever get over to Union Avenue, the Sun Studios?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I go by there all the time.
Someday I will make my pilgrimage. In the meanwhile, I'll just remember the good old days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not a good time right now.
No, in fact, you're probably hunkered like everybody else. How are you coping with all of the, well, I'll just call it weirdness out there?
Well, doing pretty good. I can shoot in my backyard, so it's not too bad.
You're a lucky guy. Most of us can't say that. I can say it too, but not very many other folks.
No.
So we're looking down range. We're going to talk about shotgun choices and why and that sort of thing. But to stay positive, let's talk about your opening weekend of hunting season. What are you looking forward to most about that?
Oh, I like working with the dogs. I don't have dogs. I have friends with dogs, and that's always better.
People, if you haven't learned anything from that statement, now is your chance. Write it down. It's absolutely true. How many times have I told that to other people? Well, where are you going? You have any guesses yet, or are you waiting for an invite?
Invite's always good. I have a group that we go to South Dakota in November every year, and we take about 8 dogs and about 8 hunters with us, and we have a pretty good time. It's always just luck if you get there at the right week because of the harvest of the corn. You know, this year it was late, so we would have had better luck probably 2 weeks later.
Yeah, and you know, this year they're still standing corn. I just talked to somebody in Huron, South Dakota this morning. They're still standing corn from last fall that hasn't been harvested. But we got our fingers crossed and good luck on that. It sounds like you guys have it down to a science in terms of your travel and everything. All right. So when you head for South Dakota, or when you head for wherever you head, first weekend of the season, what kind of gun you carrying?
Normally I carry a couple of Beretta, side by sides. I, you know, take one that I, my favorite, and I have one for a backup. If I don't, sometimes I have a few Ithaca SKBs that I like, and I might take one of those, but I always take my favorite Beretta 20 gauge.
I love it. And 20 gauge sounds like plenty of gun for you no matter what.
Oh yeah, it's plenty for pheasant.
You know those Ithaca SKBs? I shot one once in Wyoming of all places, and it was a borrowed gun at the time. I searched high and low to try and find one after that, and I believe they'd been discontinued by then, and I was
Oh yeah.
mad because I shot that as good as anything I'd ever shot before.
That was my first side by side was a Model 100, and I still have one of those, and I usually rabbit hunt with it. I have, different guns for different hunts, and I'm OCD, I guess, a little bit about that. I like my 100 for rabbits, and I have a gun for quail and a gun for pheasant. It's just
Yep.
I'm a little quirky, I guess.
Well, no. Quirky or OCD would be if they are alphabetized in the gun safe.
Yeah.
Don't
Not that
admit it
far.
now. Be careful. But I know what you mean, and I'm getting the same way sometimes. Ever been tempted to a semi-automatic or an over and under?
I have semi-automatics and over and unders, and I have pumps, but I out in South Dakota, we've been out there a few times when it was so cold and so much moisture that the automatics turned into single shots. And I've always just all ever since I was a teenager, I always liked side by sides more than anything else. And anytime I can hunt with one, I do it. And my friends will say, "Well, you're never going to get a triple." And I always tell them, "Well, when I start getting doubles, I'll worry about triples."
Oh, good. I'm going to write that one down because I could use it. Yeah, I'll never forget. I was at a bitterly cold day in somewhere in Kansas, and we were shooting sporting clays, and the squad in front of us were all shooting a certain Italian semi-automatic gun, and we'd always have to wait for them to finish up because everybody's gun jammed at every station. And it was we finally put two and two together. They all carried their can of WD-40, and after every shot, they were spraying more WD-40 into the action of those guns.
Right.
Oh my.
I've seen it happen on a lot of hunts.
Yeah, absolutely. The fewer moving parts, the better in my book.
But a side by side to me, when I was a kid, when I was would read about bird hunting in magazines and stuff, back in the day. I'm 60 years old, so this is back in the mid 70s, and they always carried side by sides, and to me that was just always a classic, and I kind of got hooked on them, and never have switched.
Are you a history buff in general then as well, or was that
No,
where it ended, you know?
I just it's just I like, classic things, and a side by side is classic.
Well, I agree. I'm not going to argue that. I agree 100%. In fact, I was going to do a little research before we began our talk today, and I never got around to it. But I will promise you all that I'll do some research on the origins of the over and under. I think it's a Browning thing, but I'm not sure. But anyway, we'll get to that. And it was much later than everything else we're talking about here, for what it's worth. Bo, always good to talk guns with you and everybody else. Thanks so much for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
I'm happy to be here.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Yeah, he's got it right. There's memories of all sorts, and whatever floats your boat in that world is okay by me. I'm Scott Linden, your host on the Upland Nation podcast. Mike Stubbs writes, "I've shot pumps and semi-autos my whole life and love them." He said live them, but I know he meant love them. "But I've always wanted a nice side by side. There's something elegant about them, even just the plain Jane ones." Yeah, those are the ones I have. "I know better than to get a fancy one. I'm going to drop it off at Chucker Hill someday." And then Dean Salihian says he loves them all except the pump. He's never owned one of those. "Depending on his mood that day." Yeah, there's something to be said for that. I always joke about my knife wardrobe. Wherever I go, I'm carrying some sort of a knife, usually just a little pocket knife. But having a gun wardrobe may be a little more expensive, but still big fun. Okay, well, hey, we got more callers in the queue, and we'll be covering that as we move along through the Upland Nation podcast. First, We'll cover some dog training and dog care information after this short break, first break of the day. Brought to you in part here at the Upland Nation Podcast by Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food. Learn more at drtims.com. And if you're on the fence about changing dog foods, here's your inspiration. 30% off your first order. Just use the code UPLANDNATION. Dr. Tim, of course, a veterinarian and a musher, knows a little bit about dog performance, puts the highest levels available of omega-3 fatty acids like DHA and EPA in his dog's diet. That'll strengthen the dog's immune system, reduce inflammation in the skin and joints, and increase the ability to fight cancer and benefit heart health. Can't argue with any of those, can you? Well, neither can Dr. Tim. Learn more about Dr. Tim's dog food at drtims.com. And if you missed the sports shows and one of the more fun features there, which is watching all those other guys get fitted for hearing protection, you know, kind of like a monkey in a cage sitting there on a stool while people squirt stuff into your ears and everybody points at you and laughs. Well, you don't worry about that, because at espamerica.com, they can arrange for you to get fitted in private at a local audiologist's office. Always good to check in with them anyhow. Have your hearing tested while you're there. Last time I had it done for my ESP hearing protection devices, my audiologist reminded me that listening to your wife is different than hearing your wife. I'll tell you that story someday. Anyway, go to espamerica.com, hit the dealer locator page, and find a nearby dealer audiologist and get custom fitted in a low-key private setting at espamerica.com. All right, so some of you know, and now you're all going to know that in another life, in fact, the only thing I'm legally qualified to do is teach. My teacher who taught me to taught, Larry McQuarrie, was brilliant in so many ways. He was a pioneer in teaching via video. You know, back then we called it taping, but Larry McQuarrie would tape us teaching, and then he'd drag us into another room and show us the tape, and we would learn a whole bunch just by watching ourselves, including whether or not we needed to be on a diet. But I appreciate your help, Dr. McQuarrie, and one of the things you taught me that I have never forgotten is, with students of any sort, two legs or four legs, you want to take them from where they are to where you want them to be. In other words, there is no instant microwave solution to a training situation. So I start most of my training, at least in the morning every day, on the training table. Lick knows that's where the learning starts. He also knows that when he gets up there that it's time to pay attention and it's time to heed my commands. Once those commands are mastered on the table, we can move them almost anywhere. And of course, that's the next topic. We'll be talking about that down the road. But take your dog from where he is, literally or figuratively, to where you want him to be. And I can guarantee you, your dog will understand slightly better all the things that you're hoping he's learning. Okay, so we're back to the phones, and Kent joins me to talk about side-by-sides versus over-and-unders versus et cetera, et cetera. Kent, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
So let's start on a brighter note first. Maybe that's the right way. That's the wrong way to describe it. Let's just start by looking downrange. How is your next hunting season coming together?
Well, I went out today, actually, to check out my training grounds. I don't know if you know, but I run a little bird dog training operation. And I went out today with my lovely wife, and we ran our two dogs on the training grounds and had a beautiful point on a pair of Hungarian partridge. they're starting to pair up now, you know, because they'll be breeding soon.
And you got to tell us what kind of dogs you're running after that.
Well, I own two Brittany's and an English Pointer. One of the Brittany's is retired, so he just stays home. But I ran a 7-year-old Brittany and an 8-year-old Pointer today, and had a beautiful point, probably 30 yards from the birds, and then the Pointer honored the Brittany, and I shot a little video of it, but I haven't posted it yet on my Facebook page.
Hey, you're a pro at this. Do you actually train to back the other pointing dogs, or do you just hope your dogs come to that naturally?
I actually train it. You know, some dogs have a little more instinctual backing in their breeding, but it really comes from just working birds. And because we hunt so much, we probably, you know, hunt 3-4 days a week during the hunting season. And then we also hunt preserves. So that keeps us pretty busy. And our dogs, you know, typically I'm killing them probably 150 wild birds a year over them. And that's not shooting limits. That's shooting, you know, maybe 2 or 3 birds each outing.
Nice. Well, there you go. No birds, no bird dog. And the opposite is also true. So
exactly.
Excellent. So when you're out there shooting those birds, what's your go-to shotgun?
Well, I like packing a Stevens 20-gauge over and under model 555. The reason I like the gun is it's made in Turkey. It's a great little gun, but it's super lightweight. It's I think it runs in right about 5.1 pounds, and I actually own 3 of them. I've got one in 410, one in 28 gauge, and one in 20 gauge. And so when I hunt quail, I typically like to shoot those with the 410, and then when I'm hunting open country, big country for chuckers and huns, I usually take the 20 gauge, and then on occasion, I just pull the 28 gauge out if I don't really feel like I need to actually, you know, be shooting a lot of birds, and I only plan to shoot 1 or 2 birds, and I know I have to put in a lot more miles, like late season hunting. That's when I usually carry the 28 gauge, and it just makes it a little more fun for me, because usually by the end of the season, my shooting is really good. I do shoot a lot of birds during my training season. I kill 300 game birds for the 20 dogs that I train each year. So I get a lot of shooting in year round.
Well, I shoot all season as well, but I don't shoot very well all season. And I don't think I'm any better at the end than I am at the beginning, but that's okay. I don't mind. You know, it's kind of interesting to hear somebody go through all the gauges, not all of them, but, you know, some of the smaller gauge guns like that, even in the big country. How are you loading those guns for, you know, let's say, for a partridge hunt?
Early season birds, you can usually do pretty good with 6-shot. But honestly, for getting kills and really not wounding birds, 4-shot is my favorite. I know you give up BBs, but with the 20 gauge and there again, that Stevens 555 has a 3-inch chamber. So I shoot 3-inch, 4-shot. And even on the longer shots, it puts them down, and the BBs are just big, you know, a little bit bigger. So it really does break the bone better.
Let's talk about the smaller gauges, the 28 and the 410. How do you rationalize that if somebody says, well, you know, you don't have as many pellets, you know, it doesn't have the oomph that another gun has? What's your answer to them?
Well, the reason those guns work so well, and I hunt a lot of quail too out here in Northeast Washington, so the points are a lot closer and the flushes are closer. So you can engage the birds, you know, say the 20-yard mark. And with the 410, it's either a hit or a miss. I mean, you're going to be dead on. And it doesn't take a lot of BBs to put a quail down and put them down hard. Mm-hmm. And there again, I typically shoot probably bigger shot than what most people shoot. I shoot 6s when I hunt quail even. I'd rather hit them with a little bit bigger pellet and not have as many hits per se on the bird and put them down hard. really kill them.
I've been doing that a little bit more myself, for the very same reason. It's usually chuckers and quail for me, and shooting a quail with a 6 shot is a lot smarter than shooting a chucker with a 7.5 shot. So I know what you mean there, and good luck. What's the first thing you're going to do when you get out into the field this fall? Get us all primed up for it, Kent.
Well, I'd probably be chasing the huns and the quail. The area I hunt's got quite a few of both. And then it's actually got a few bunches of chucker. So I get a chance to chase those three birds. They make such beautiful pictures, too, at the end of the day.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. It's great to talk with you. I'm getting primed myself. Thank you for the inspiration, and thanks for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
He says he's hunkered down like the rest of us. John, how are you coping with this new reality?
That's interesting, I suppose.
That's a fair estimation, I'd say.
Oh, yeah.
Are you able to play with your dogs while you're hunkered down?
Yes, I am. We're right now sitting outside enjoying the evening. Little cool, but we're enjoying it.
We did the same thing. We bundled up last night and did that as well, just out of spite. You know, we're just going to, gosh dang it, it is going to be spring, no matter if it snowed the day before yesterday or not. So
yep.
Good for you, and I'm grateful. Well, whereabouts are you?
Northern Minnesota. Well, about midway in between the Great Lakes area, the Brainerd-Baxter area.
Nice. Well, let's keep things on a positive note here. Are you looking forward to the next hunting season?
Yes, I am. I'm always looking forward to the next hunting season.
And what about it has got you already chomping at the bit?
Well, we recently had purchased a new shotgun, so we're looking forward to picking them up when we get out of quarantine. And then on our way out.
Well, this is a timely conversation then. So what did you get for yourself?
We actually picked up a 12-gauge pointer, and then she got the 20-gauge.
So,
and I think between the two of us, myself, after having a semi-auto shotgun, it would be a lot more economic for me when I'm working with the dog.
Yeah, that's a good point. So tell me how that thinking goes, because I got my own ideas about that.
Well, not myself personally, you know, in large hunting parties and that, you never know if somebody's, you know, not that one split second that they're gunned down and doing something else. You don't know, or anybody else in the party, they don't really know if it's loaded or not. And it's kind of hard, you know, with the semi-auto shotgun, you don't really know unless the bolt's pulled back in a safe position.
Good point. Yeah. And glad to hear about your his and her pointer shotguns. I hope you told them I sent you. And you're partial to the 12-gauge and she's partial to the 20-gauge, or is that just what I think it is?
It actually, the 20-gauge fits her better than a 12-gauge did, and then it was light to where she really liked it.
Well, that's and what then, matters, liking it.
Well, yeah, she liked it, and she, you know, as far as carrying it in the field, I think you can't go wrong.
Do you see any philosophical obstacles in going from a semi-automatic to an over and under?
You know, I can't really say. I haven't really shot an over under, so I'm really excited to get into shooting a lot of clays with it, for one thing. Myself personally, after having a semi-auto or even a pump shotgun, you're looking most of the time maybe 2 shots anyhow. I've never really came across that third shot by then, they're too far.
So true. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Right, right.
I love it. You're absolutely right. Well, what do you think? I mean, now I'm really curious. What do you think is going to be the biggest challenge swapping over to an over and under with one trigger? You know, same as the old one, but barrel selection and some of those other things. You see any mechanical challenges to that, John?
You know, I think, yeah, there's going to be a lot of different, you know, the right tube, the wrong tube, and you always get somebody else's, you know, opinion on, well, you need this ammo, you need that ammo. So I could see it being a bit of a challenge.
Well, nothing a thousand rounds at the Sporting Clays range won't fix.
That's right.
Good.
No, I really don't think it, you know, besides, like I said, I think, personally, I think it'd be a lot easier to work with your dog.
Yeah. Amen to that. You're absolutely correct on that, and I wish you the best. Hey, welcome to the fraternity of Double Guns, and have a safe and productive season. Good luck to you, John. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
And Facebook fan Cato Duguid, I have a feeling that's a nom de plume. Cato Duguid says he loves his Benelli semi-automatic because he hasn't been able to find a belt-fed shotgun. I happen to know where you can find one of those, but you probably can't get the permit for it, Cato. Judging from my shooting, he says, some days, I will need to upgrade to one of those soon. And John Billadou writes, I only hunt upland birds, so I prefer an over and under. I like the option of two different chokes. And that becomes way more of an issue. You know, the first side-by-side I got was built in the English style. And what that meant, of course, was that there's no pistol grip. And I learned early on, at least one of the theories behind that is it had double triggers as well. So the idea being you could slide your hand down slightly from the front trigger and hit that lower trigger, if you will. And then it was built originally for shooting driven birds. And so you could alternate and shoot the right barrel versus the left barrel, because on the oncoming birds, you wanted a tighter choke on the first bird than on the second bird. Anyway, trivia that may or may not be of interest to you, but I found it fascinating. Let's get back to the phones, where we'll probably be more fascinated than the stuff that I've been blathering about. And I'm sure he has more and more important stuff to say than I've been saying. Ron, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Scott. Hi, guys.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm fantastic, man. Sitting in here in West, by God, Virginia, sitting in a valley looking at two beautiful mountains. Life couldn't be any better right now.
Unless it was opening weekend.
That's right.
And are you looking forward to it yet?
Yes, I am, man. I tell you what, the last day of the season, I start looking forward to the first season. Hopefully this year we'll get to make it, huh?
Well, that's the whole goal today, is to keep people looking downstream and anticipating the opening of this hunting season, which will take place come hell or high water if I have a vote in it. So toward that end, I've been asking everybody about their shotgun styles and what they prefer. What's on the top shelf in Ron's gun case?
Well, I'll tell you, Scott, I have a couple really nice 16 gauge side by sides that I just love to grouse hunt with them, man. It's settled nostalgia feeling, you know, when you're out there, you know, hunting with a side by side. But I've got a Fosty over and under shotgun with an English stock or straight stock on it that just fits me like a glove, man. I just shoot grouse, you know, like I said, you know, lights out with it versus the side by side. But maybe it's not as sexy, but it really gets the job done.
Well, you know, there's a fine line in there between nostalgia and efficiency, and it sounds like you straddle it once in a while. Is it ever a problem when you reach into the back of the truck and try to grab one over the other?
It's always a struggle, you know. It's always a struggle. I gotta admit, I went through a slump this year, a bad slump. You know, it's like a designated hitter in baseball. I knew what I was doing wrong, but I mentally just couldn't fix it. You know, the old stop the shotgun, wouldn't get my head down, wouldn't get my feet planted right. My gun mount was all wrong time and time again. I mean, it was crazy. And, I put the side-by-sides down and grabbed the over and under and went back to work just to get some purge for my dogs. They were really starting to give me the old evil eye, you know?
Yeah, I do know. I remember when I was more of a baseball player, back when my shoulder and my elbow were cooperative, we'd just switch bats for a while, and that would help. You know, it was all in your head anyway.
Yeah.
But switching guns, did it work? I mean, when you switch back, did it help?
No, it really didn't. I just reset my batting average. I went from maybe 100 batting average. I just reset the whole thing and went to 1,000, then to 500 real quick. But anyhow, we had fun.
Well, you know, batting 100 these days will get you a $3 million contract at the Dodgers these days.
I know.
If only I'd stayed with the game. Oh, well, that's another story. Yeah. And hi, Don Mraz, speaking of professional ball players. Hello, Don. I hope you're listening. So what are you going to start with then? Now you've got a real dilemma because nothing's really working for you. What are you going to start with opening weekend?
Well, you know, I think we're going to retool this fall.
You're going to buy a Remington 870?
No. I think we're going to, you know, I love the 16 gauge, caliber. I love it the best for grouse hunting. You know, as my grandfather always used, I think Browning is making a really beautiful shotgun. My boy, you know, he bought a nice CZ. He likes it over and under. He likes it real, real well. So I'm kind of torn. But either way I go, it's going to be an over and under. It'll be in a 16 gauge is kind of what we're looking at.
You feel that connection like some other callers as well, then. I think there's something about that 16 that just to – it's like you said, you know, there's a little bit of a nostalgia factor in there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There absolutely is. I'm glad it's finally, you know, started to come back and catch back on, and shells are easier to get now. You can get them, you know, Walmart or anywhere pretty much anymore now. So it's been a really good thing. You know, and I like the fact that they make them on a 16 gauge frame instead of on a 12 gauge frame, right? So, you know, for us upland hunters, you know, something that's 6 pounds or less is kind of what I'm looking for. I don't like to carry that big club around all day climbing up and down a West Virginia mountain. You know, it wears on you.
Yeah, I do know the feeling. I started my hunting career with a Ruger Red Label. I think it weighed 8.5 pounds, and that was before I loaded it. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, good on you. And glad you could be a part of the Upland Nation podcast. John, thanks. Oh, no, with Ron. Oh, it's been one of those nights already. But anyway, so good luck. I hope your season starts when it's supposed to, and I hope you can get out there, and I hope you can share that field with your son as well. So thanks for being part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Well, we got time for one more caller. Eric is on the line with me. Eric, where are you calling from?
Locust Grove, Georgia.
Georgia. Okay, is that down in the, you know, that plantation country down there?
I'm not far from Atlanta. I'm up above the plantation country.
Well, wonderful place. I was lost there one night trying to find a hunting lodge, but we eventually found it, and then we caused a whole lot of trouble in the kitchen that night. So, Eric, thanks for being part of the Upland Nation podcast. For everybody else, I'm Scott Linden. I'm glad you're sticking with us as we're talking shotguns and looking downstream to all of the good things that are going to happen after this whole kerfuffle of coronavirus goes away. Eric, what are you looking forward to most for this hunting season? So what is it?
Getting on some more wild birds. I hope traveling.
So traveling for wild birds, because you don't have access to those high end colonial era plantations down there.
No, I sure don't.
So where are you going?
I hope to make it to South Dakota. I was supposed to go this year, and my dog had to have surgery 2 days before we left, so that got canceled. So hopefully, I can make it this year.
Well, that sucks, but it sounds like he pulled through and he's getting in shape for the upcoming season.
Yeah, he sure is.
Just for our own edification, what kind of dog are you running?
German Shorthair.
Oh, good for you, and I'm glad he's on the road to recovery. So when you put your short hair down on the ground in South Dakota somewhere that we'll talk about off the air, what kind of shotgun are you going to be carrying?
Up there, probably a Benelli M2.
What do you like so much about that Benelli?
Just lightweight and simple and works every time you pull the trigger.
That's what matters, isn't it?
It is.
Have you ever looked at anything else? I mean, is this the culmination of an evolution that's been lifelong?
I've got several different Upland guns. If around here, I've got a Benelli 20 gauge, and then I've got an old side by side that I got from my grandfather that I mainly use. But I worked at a gun store that sold Benellis for about 5 years, so they kind of have a soft spot in my heart.
Well, you probably heard every argument for and against every single kind of gun. So
Yeah.
When you were doing that, Eric, was there any particular, I don't mean a brand name as much as, was any particular type of gun that was more problematic than other types, or the other way around, the most reliable?
I mean, an automatic's has the most chance to have a problem, I'd say. Anything break open or pumps are usually pretty reliable. I mean, I have had issues with pumps, but break-open guns are probably your most reliable.
But you shoot a semi-automatic anyhow. Is there anything you do differently? I mean, besides wave the magic wand over it every time?
Just keep it clean. I think that's the most important part.
If you're going to use any kind of lubrication on your Benelli, what are you going to use?
Break free.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was worth the wait. I'm glad we connected. And if you were going to hand it down to your 3-year-old at some point, what would you tell him about that side by side that you basically got handed down to yourself?
It's nothing fancy, but it's a good, reliable gun that I like it because I have it has more drop than the more modern guns, and it seems to fit me a little bit better. I don't know if it would have helped them, but it's actually my grandfather inherited it from his uncle, so it's been in the family for a while. So.
Nice. Well, those are the kind of stories I love to hear. Thanks so much for sharing them, and thanks for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast. I'll turn you loose to your 3-year-old.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
And Lance Larson tells me he loves his over and under, just never felt comfortable shooting semi-autos. But they are a little bit longer, and that's something he can't quite get used to. He says pumps and semis are pump guns are single shots for me because I can never remember to pump them after shooting. And then, of course, side-by-sides. They are just perfect, says Lance. And then he says, and the 28 gauges are even a little bit more perfect. Well, it's kind of hard to argue with that, isn't it? All right, stick around. I've got a suggestion for a public access spot coming up. But first, a word from our sponsors. The first one on the list, Gunner Kennels. Learn more about them at gunner.com. Yeah, a little bit more heavy than some of the others out there, but that's what happens when you want to protect your dog, and you know how much your dog is worth. And I don't mean what you paid for him as a puppy, but what you've invested in training, the trust and companionship, let alone the dog food. Well, Addison Edmonds feels the same way. That's why he designed Gunner Kennels the way he did. I know it's a bite into the budget, but there is financing available. You can get one for $38 a month, and every crate has a lifetime warranty. So while we've been talking about shotguns and handing them down like heirlooms, well, maybe your Gunner Kennel will fit into that category as well. Learn more at gunner.com. And speaking of using stuff and using it and handing it down, the Dogtra TNB dual collar is just like that. Learn more at dogtra.com. That's dogtra.com. You can get 10% off the purchase price using the code SLUN10. And then there's free shipping on any purchase over $200. No toggling, two sets of buttons. I'm training Flick with my pair of dual collars and one handheld. And one of the things that I've learned to appreciate so much is the battery life. I'll forget to turn the dang things off at the end of the day. Come out to the shop in the morning and they're still blinking away. Always will, always do. I don't know. Someday I'll remember. But even when I do, it's so simple. Learn more about the Dogtra T&B Dual and what I mean by turning it on and turning it off so simply with the docking capabilities of the handheld to the collar. It's all at Dogtra T&B Dual. It's all at Dogtra.com. And this land is your land. I'm going to kind of break with the precedent here. Remind you that if you want more information about this particular place, head to findbirdhuntingspots.com. Sign up for the mailing list at my new website, and you might win a pointer shotgun for yourself. Anyway, unlike all of my other recommendations, this is one that is on my watch list for this season, and I have my friends at Pointer Shotgun to thank for it. Appreciate that, Andy. We will hunt there this fall. I guarantee you, I'll be heading your way. Going off the reservation and sharing one of my goals, and it is the Truckee River bottoms east of Reno, Nevada. You can follow the Truckee from Reno all the way to Pyramid Reservoir, where it empties into that reservoir and becomes basically the end of the line for that river. Beautiful trout river in places, and beautiful Valley Quail River in some as well. Kind of interspersed willow and sage thickets along the riverbanks there. Some of it's public, and when it is, it's Bureau of Land Management land. And you'll want to be careful about property lines, but check out the Truckee River bottoms east of Reno as one new place to try for Valley Quail if you're out west this coming season, and we will have a season, I guarantee you. One more reminder, my friends at ESPAmerica.com, Electronic Shooters Protection, America.com, custom fitted digital hearing protection devices. Learn more about them right there and their custom fitting options. Local audiologists at your convenience. And now it's time to say goodbye. I sure appreciate your listening. I'm Scott Linden, your host on the Upland Nation podcast. Please tell your friends, share, rate or review, subscribe, All those things help get the word out. And if you do subscribe or rate or review, you're entered for that pointer over and under shotgun. You can do all of that starting at uplandnation.com. You can follow our discussions at the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page or the Upland Nation Facebook page. Keep your eyes on the prize, everybody. We will have a hunting season, and I will see you in the field. In the meanwhile, practice your social distancing, but don't forget to give your family a hug, say hello to your friends, and work with your dogs maybe a little bit more than usual. It's all good. Thanks for listening.